You are listening to Faithless Brewing, a Magic the Gathering podcast for the rogue deck builder. Each week, we design new decks in Modern and Pioneer. We put our faces to the test and share our findings on the air. Coming up on the brew session, 7 new deck lists with Burgi, God of Storytelling. From aggro to combo and maybe a little value thrown in. Then on a flashback, testing results with Magda, Brazen Outlaw. All of that and more is coming up in episode 9 of Kaldheim Season. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Faithless Brewing Podcast. I am David Robertson, joining you from the frigid tundra of the Twin Cities. Joined, as always, by my guy on the left coast. He is Damon Alexander. Damon, what's poppin'?
Oh, yeah, just chilling in the sunshine, catching some rays in the 42-degree Seattle.
And we are, of course, joined, as always, by the CEO of the Faithless Brewing Podcast. He is Caved In Online. Daniel Schriever, what is going on?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I've been better. I had a bit of a high last weekend, just playing all these sweet Tybalt decks, but, you know, my life has taken a turn since then. Started testing Magda, for example. I was a little bit less happy.
Yeah, you have to kind of come back down to earth with the rest of the mortals and slave in the pits with the rest of the Morlocks. So just a reminder to everyone, we are now releasing 2 episodes a week. We released an episode on Friday. You will have heard where we talked about Dan's triumphant run to the top 8 of the Modern Challenge and all of his iterations, which were just a little bit ahead of the metagame for the sort of Tybalt Valky cascade world we were living in at the time. This episode, we are going to discuss our newest card of interest, which will be Burgi. We're going to talk about her in a second. And we, at the end, are going to find some time to flash back to some of our brews from last week about Magda, Brazen Outlaw. So, to kick us off, let's talk about the lady of the day, Burgi, God of Storytelling, I guess / Harnfell, Horn of Bounty. So, Damon, just read the card to us, and then let's talk about what she does and or her horn.
Yeah, so we have 2 and a red for a 3/3 legendary god. Whenever you cast a spell, add red mana, 1 red. Until end of turn, you don't lose this mana as steps and phases end. Lastly, probably the most important part of the whole card, both sides, is creatures you control can boast twice during each of your turns rather than once. So, for those of you who haven't been boasting too much in Kaldheim, Modern, or Pioneer, boasting is a thing you can do if you attack that creature this turn. Then going to the backside, we have Harnfell, Horn of Bounty, 4 and a red for a legendary artifact. Discard a card, : exile the top 2 cards of your library. You may play those cards this turn. So it's kind of like Magmatic Chandler, but you don't have to make a choice. You can just have both of them.
So does Harnfell turn 1 card into 2? Is it effectively a draw 2?
Not exactly, because the cards could both be lands, for instance. It's worth knowing you can do it again and again. That means if you have 7 cards in your hand, let's say you wanted to mill yourself out or something, all of a sudden you've exiled 14 cards from the top of your library. And if any of those cards has an effect that puts a card back in your hand, you get to activate Harnfell again. So I think this is a lot more powerful than people were thinking, you know, as sort of some of these red artifact enchantment effects we've seen that sort of incrementally draw you an extra card a turn. This does a little bit more than that. And if you have synergies out of your graveyard, sometimes discarding a card is not even that bad.
Yeah, it's like it turns every card in your hand into a potential draw too. So in that sense, it's just like a massive engine card. Although you pay for it with 4 and a red for a cost, and you know, not the most obvious synergies. Obviously, there's a dream involving discard a bunch of Arclay Phoenixes, but that still takes time. And if you get this into play first and not have it be bounced by everybody's favorite 3-mana planeswalker, or exiled by everybody's other favorite 3-mana planeswalker.
At the end of the Kaldheim previews, we conducted a little informal hype poll in our Faithless Brewing Discord community just to see what cards people were most excited to start brewing with. And Burgi came ahead clear number 1 choice. People are really excited about this card. I'm actually not sure whether it was for the front half or the back half. I assume the front half.
My thought was it was a front half card because, much like us, there are a lot of Song of Creation nuts on the Discord. We obviously did Song of Creation on our YouTube show for Wizards of the Coast, Rogue Refinery. Check it out. We had some sweet lists there. I think we all had winning records. I can't remember. And I know like Jiggy Wiggy and a few other people have been playing it before this card existed. And this seems to naturally fit into these sort of pseudo storm shells. The piece of text I think everyone's excited about is that when you cast a spell, add a red mana. And unlike Prowess or some of these other things, doesn't tell you what type of spell. So it can be Mishra's Bauble. That's making mana. It can be Manamorphos. That's going up mana. It can be, you know, any of the red creatures that replace themselves. The red-green hybrid card that makes a red and a green. There's a two and a red for a 2/1 that makes three red. All these cards all of a sudden are making mana. So if you can find a way to draw cards to spend that mana, it sort of goes together, and Song of Creation turns every spell you cast into cards, and Burgi turns every spell you cast into mana. And so she seems to be at one with the Song of Creation. She might be the Aretha Franklin of her generation.
Yeah, what's cool about Burgi is that some of the gods, like their front side and their backside, really would work well together if you draw multiples. Some are like Valky and Tibalt, like the front side and the backside, they're both magic cards. They both are strong magic cards. But it's like if you have a Valky out and you play a Tibalt, it's not like, oh my gosh, they work so much better together than they do apart. You know, Burgi and her horn actually do work a lot better together because the horn just gives you all the gas in the world. And Burgi's front half gives you all the mana in the world. And mana plus gas is, you know, a big fire to tell stories around.
Yeah, the front half reminds me of Runaway Steamkin, and the back half is like Experimental Frenzy, which is Runaway Steamkin's best friend. So it would be nice to have two copies of this. You could just pick one Burgi and one Harnfell. You have yourself a rousing night of storytelling and good tales by the roaring fire.
It's also worth noting, you know, and obviously you don't have to play Burgi in a storm deck, but in the types of storm decks, that often needs a bunch of cards, and so you can get to a point where your hand's been attacked or you've been disrupted. And so you have a Burgi in play. A lot of times those decks have cards that don't really function. You just have to re-amass those cards. But if you draw your second Burgi and you flood it out, maybe you just play the horn and all of a sudden, maybe future turns, you can turn that into enough material to maybe start to try to start your storm combo or whatever again from almost nothing.
Yeah. One of the decks we saw a lot of in the first week I saw some streamers playing was this sort of straight up mono red storm list. And so it was playing a lot of cards like Act on Impulse, Desperate Ritual, things like that. And ultimately, I think some Empty the Warrens to win. And that deck actually, I think it was primarily using Burgi for the front half, but every so often you would have the mana and the time to cast the back half. And it certainly seemed powerful.
You just said Act on Impulse as if that's a card we're supposed to know. I'm guessing this is 3-mana Exile 3, basically.
Yeah, you guys don't watch enough Caleb Durward streaming Legacy. He has this bonus round deck he plays sometimes, and I believe it plays Act on Impulse. It's basically, 3 and a red to draw 3 cards, but with a typical red clause of actually don't draw them. You exile them and can play them this turn. This turn, I'm like Light Up the Stage, so it's a little even hastier.
I think they realized that clause was a little too restrictive, so they added the until next turn to a lot of these cards.
Yeah, and they printed Escape to the Wilds, and they forgot that part.
So in Legacy, there's a deck called Ruby Storm. I'm not sure how tier it is, but with Ruby Medallion, you know, you could really just go nuts with these effects. I think there's a card called, Jessica's Will or something like that. That's from a Commander product that does a similar thing to Act on Impulse. So maybe people are just seeing Burgi and wondering if they can also do that in other formats.
Yeah. The Ruby Storm list, I think, is the same as the bonus round list. I think they kind of converged.
And I didn't see any of these lists published, so I'm guessing they weren't very good. But it's something to consider. I think the other sort of starting place for a card like this is, well, you see some affinities to Baral and Goblin Electromancer in terms of reducing or giving you a rebate on your spells. Maybe Burgi is just like good enough in traditional Gift Storm. And thankfully someone else already tried this, so we don't even have to bother. I watched a video and it's fine. You know, Bryant Cook from the Eternal Glory podcast, he played a league and went 3-2. I didn't think Burgi was that good in that list, but he said it was slightly better than Electromancer.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting. So obviously more expensive than Electromancer initially, but it does give you mana back for all your 1-mana cantrips. So Electromancer and Baral do not, you know, help you out when you cast Serum Visions or Opt or anything like that. So that's where she starts to shine if you're casting a bunch of those spells.
Yeah, although you lose the ability to go kind of the old turn three Brawl into Metamorphose into win the game after a few more spells are cast.
Right, and I think people only do that against me anyway, so they don't. You're not really losing anything if I'm not playing in that Modern League.
So the question becomes, what do we want to do with Brugy?
Let's look at some lists, and we can discuss them.
What do you have for us, Brewmaster David?
All right, so let's start in Pioneer. So, Dan, you mentioned Brugy reminds you a little bit of Runaway Steamkin. So I like to start out with, we talk about this a lot, the Rule of Eight. So we have eight cards that kind of do the same thing. This is a deck that's trying to use those cards with Showdown of the Scalds. Showdown of the Scalds is another card that was spoiled, or excuse me, that was in Kaldheim. Two, a red and a white for a 4-mana enchantment. It reveals the top 4 cards of your library, exiles them, and you can cast them until the next end of your next turn. And then chapter 2 and 3 add +1/+1 counters every time you cast a spell. So this deck is playing the 8 prowess creatures, Monastery, Swift Spear, Soul Scar Mage. It's playing 8 1 red mana cantrips, which are functionally free with Runaway Steamkin or Brugy in play. It's playing Abbot of Carol Keep, which draws another card. So it's kind of like a card advantage engine, if you want to call it. It's playing 2 Shepherd of the Flock. Shepherd of the Flock is the maybe lesser known. If you play Standard, I think people are starting to use this tech a lot. But the front half, the adventure half, is 1 white, return a permanent you control to your hand. So this card is super sweet with Showdown of the Scalds. And it's also, I guess, reasonable with Abbot of Carol Keep. Or I guess if you wanted to bounce a Brugy and turn it into a horn, you could do that. But basically what we're trying to do is sort of set up this turn where with a Showdown at the Scalds, we are getting mana from Brugy, mana from Runaway Steamkin. The +1/+1 counters from the second and third chapter of Showdown of the Scalds actually works incredibly well with Runaway Steamkin. All these 1 mana spells are actually making mana net positive because you can put the +1/+1 counters on Runaway Steamkin. You can even remove all 3 in the middle of these targets. You can stack your triggers. And then you're also sort of like a beatdown deck, but you're basically trying to set up, you're both an aggro deck and you're also a deck that can grind because you have all these sort of extra draw effects in. So I'm kind of interested in trying a shell like this, maybe not these specific 60 cards, with something like this as a starting point.
This is not the most practical question, but is it possible to play your entire deck if you have, say, a horn and a Brugy down?
Yeah, it's very, very possible.
Don't you need like a certain density of cantrips that I think we probably don't quite have?
Well, you can Showdown of the Scalds and then blink it to like get through enough lands to find enough spells.
Yeah.
It's worth noting, like, if you're, this is Magical Christmas Land, but if you have a Showdown of the Scalds that's triggered its like second turn, its second chapter, and you have a Brugy and Runaway Steamkin in play, like almost every spell in your deck is actually generating mana. Just casting the front half of Bone Crusher Giant, then the second Bone Crusher Giant, that's actually netting you 2 or 3 mana, which is just insane. So yeah, you can set up some real crazy turns if this all lines up. And you still have the fail case of just like beating people down with the 1-mana prowess creatures, which are quite powerful.
Yeah, I think Showdown is perfect here. This list looks absolutely sweet. I was going to advocate for Experimental Frenzy instead of Showdown, but I take it back. just that line with the Runaway Steamkin putting the Showdown counters on it seems amazing.
Yeah, as soon as I realized that, and you could do it, you know, you could order your stack. So like you put your third counter on and you're targeting it with your new counter from Showdown of the Scalds. You remove the 3 for the red, so you actually get the first one there. Yeah, I'm excited to try this deck. I think it's going to be really fun. I don't know how good it'll be, but the best turns you have are going to be absolutely insane. And unlike aggro decks, you're not like totally dead to Wrath or whatever. Like you are still playing like 4-mana draw 4s and Abbot of the Carol Keep draws a card, so...
One card that I'm like really intrigued by with Brugy is Mox Amber, which I think is in some of your other lists here, but just the way that playing a Brugy, following it up with a Mox Amber nets you 2 mana, assuming Brugy survives, that just seems so exciting. And I'm wondering if there's a way you could just maybe tinker with your legend count, maybe play Magdas instead of Abbots, and then you'll have enough to slip in a couple of Mox Ambers. You know, they're pretty free off Showdowns.
Well, we'll get to our Magda discussion later, but I can tell you I'm not interested in playing Magdas, especially without an easy way to tap them. So, yeah, if there was any way to play more Legends, I totally agree with you. I think the interaction between Mox Amber and Brugy is awesome, but I don't think I could in good conscience, maybe one just because it's, like you say, it's kind of free, but it's real tough with just four legends, and especially a three mana legend. It's tough to replace a land because we do want to hit our first couple land drops to sort of start our combo.
Could you possibly play a Lurrus or two in here somehow? Like, if you have a Bergiao, you can play Lurrus and immediately play, Swift Spear that got killed. Meanwhile, it gives you a little bit of redundancy because you play these prowess creatures, they tend to die.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, the red and white lands are spectacular, that you have the best fixing of any of the colors. And you're actually going to want a ton of white once you start to go off, because both Runaway Steamkin and Bergy make a ton of red. So, like, your pathways, you'll start playing on white as soon as you get, like, two red sources in play. So you actually have plenty of white to play Lurrus, actually. Do you want the main deck? Do you want it maybe as a post-board, hedge against removal-heavy decks? But, yeah, that is another legend that would justify maybe adding a Mox Amber. Again, it's tough with these three-mana legends. You know, you don't need the fourth mana necessarily on that. You know, that's not the turn when Mox Amber's at its absolute best.
Maybe taking it in a different direction, what if instead of trying to play more white sources, we try to play as many MDFC spell lands as possible? Spikefield Hazard, maybe Shatterskull Smashing.
Yeah, I think you want to play the full four Shatterskull Smashing in this list, just because it's free. It comes into play untapped, but I don't think you want to play the ones that come into play tapped. 22 lands is already kind of low. We are hoping to get to play our fourth land on time relatively. We can sort of expect to do that because we are playing eight cantrips, but you're going to want to use all your lands every turn. You could maybe play one of the white one, just because in some of these turns you're going to actually generate more mana than you know what to do with, but that kind of even seems like a reach to me.
Yeah, the problem with Amiria's Call is that triple white cost. Even when you do get a lot of mana going, how much of it will be white? Four Shatterskull Smashing seems a little ambitious just because it's untapped, but three life is no joke. And a lot of these Exon Pioneer are actually trying to kill you quite quickly.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah, I guess I'm just influenced by modern, like M. Hayashi's Obosh Red decks. They've shifted to play four tap lands in their mana base, four Valakut Awakenings, and four Shatterskull Smashings. Maybe just like the heuristic that we have to have on tap lands all the time is not as true as I used to think. But that's a different deck.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to play a four mana sorcery speed draw card, and he is not. So I think our requirements are just a little different than what he's doing. But I think it's worth considering your point, at least, Dan.
Okay, well, this looks really sweet. But let's talk about a Mox Amber build and see where that takes us.
All right, I'm not going to step on any of our Magda information for later, but I will say one of the few bright spots was when Magda and Kinnan were in play together. What was happening, though, was that the deck was full of air. So this list is not really a Bergy list, per se. This is a Horn list. Our goal is to play the Horn quite early, and what happens a lot of times with ramp decks, we talk about the wrong half of the deck issue, where you draw all your ramp spells or you draw all your payoffs and you can't do anything. Bergy is both a card that can be a little rampy. We do have four Mox Amber, Spring Leaf Drum, etc. that can be, you know, one turn kind of burst. But what we're really trying to do is play a turn three Horn and then cycle awake, because we're playing a bunch of legends, like we're playing four Kinnan, four Magda, four Mox Amber. You don't need those second ones. Turn those into other stuff. Because we're playing four Emry, discarding artifacts to the graveyard just gives you something to do with Emry sometimes. And you start cycling through your deck to find the payoffs, which are a bunch of other artifact cards, Verdurous Gearhulk, Immortal Sun, Metalwork Colossus, and Greathenge. And so we kind of have this extra power to cast artifacts, not just from the sort of Magda, Springleaf Drum, Mox Amber, Kinnan combo. We also have Renowned Weaponsmith. That's just a clean tap for two mana. You just have to use it to play an artifact. So just turn two Renowned Weaponsmith land on turn three, casts the Horn by itself. It's worth noting Kinnan does work with Renowned Weaponsmith, and the extra color list that Kinnan makes with Renowned Weaponsmith can be used for anything, not just artifacts.
Oh, interesting. When you're using Emry to rebuy artifacts, I'm expecting to see some little value plays, a Mishra's Bauble in Modern, or maybe Soul Guide Lantern in Pioneer. But you're talking about just huge artifacts, Greathenge, Immortal Sun, Verdurous Gearhulk, Metalwork Colossus. There's nothing in the rulebook that says Emry can't do that. I think that's just a really clever use of the card.
Yeah, and one of the things to note is maybe sometimes Emry is buying back Mox Ambers or Springleaf Drums. Those are going to often get sacrificed to Metalwork Colossus. Metalwork Colossus is an 11-mana artifact. It gets made cheaper by non-creature artifacts you have in play. So the Horn, for instance, reduces Metalwork Colossus's cost by 5. Cultivator's Caravan reduces it by 3. And Metalwork Colossus and Great Henge kind of have a lot of synergy with each other. If Metalwork Colossus is in play, then Great Henge only costs 2 green. If Great Henge is in play, Metalwork Colossus is basically can be... You can tap the Henge to play the Colossus and draw a card. And Magda, generating a bunch of little treasures, if we're not using them to ramp with Kinnan or whatever, we can sacrifice those treasures to put Metalwork Colossus back in our hand. Even if we can't cast Colossus, that kind of turns it into this draw engine with the Horn. Every time Colossus comes back to our hand, we pitch it, we draw 2 new cards. Maybe it's Cultivator's Caravan, etc. And then the Horn starts to turn into something that's putting Colossus back into play.
Yeah, that's super clever. Obviously, this is all predicated on maybe having the Horn in play, and that's going to be a little challenging, but having some way to like unlock the God tier where you're discarding cards to get 2 fresh ones, but then somehow putting cards back in your hand to do it all again, that's the dream.
Yeah, there's some wild interactions. I had to Google some of these cards along the way. My biggest concern would be that what if you don't draw a Burgi and your Emery gets stomped or something, or your Magda gets killed? So you can ramp like kind of not super hard.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can definitely get disrupted. It's nice that Kinnan itself is also sort of an outlet for all this mana if you have a bunch of it. You know, you just dump 7 mana into Kinnan and see if you can come up with a Burgi or a Verdursk Gearhulk or whatever.
Yeah. The other concern I have is that Metalwork Colossus doesn't actually necessarily win a game super fast on its own. If you have multiples, then it gets a lot better. But for example, if you go off on your turn and your opponent goes off with oops all spells, you're actually not going to win that game.
Yeah, that's correct.
So like, I wonder what cards we could put in here that give it a little bit more like reach.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, Verdursk Gearhulk is a card that has trample. I thought about the red Gearhulk because the CC in this deck is actually kind of high. So they're often probably just going to be forced to let that be a draw 3. All the value, baby.
Yeah, how to convert this into a win is a question. We'll have to think about that. But maybe your next list goes about answering that question a different way, where here I think you're actually looking to win the game in one turn.
Yeah, so this is an update to the Pioneer Song of Creation list I piloted on the Rogue Refinery YouTube show we did for Wizards of the Coast. We unfortunately lose Underworld Breach, which is obviously a very powerful card, so powerful that it got banned in this format. So we have to play a few other cards that we wouldn't like to play. For instance, we have to play the 2nd Thassa's Oracle. We don't have a cheap way to get it back from the graveyard without the Breach. I am keeping this sort of Emery Jeskai Ascendancy out to combo. So just so people are aware, Emery plus Jeskai Ascendancy and Tormod's Crypt is infinite power to all your creatures in play. Or it can draw your entire deck if you have the extra mana to play Thassa's Oracle. Also, 2 Mox Amber, same thing, you can loop them. All those cards, those cheap cards, work very well with Song of Creation. So you put your Song of Creation in play, you start casting your 0 drops, you're drawing 2 cards, and then Burgi is in there as a way to turn those extra cards into red lands. The red lands help you cast, you know, Magda or whatever else. Eventually, you hopefully find your Mox Ambers, which tap for the color of legends you have in play. So if you have a Kinnan or Emery, you can tap for a blue. And if you find 2 Mox Ambers, you, while you're comboing off, get enough blue mana to cast Thassa's Oracle, and you hopefully win the game that turn.
Why no Uros in this list?
I mean, Uro doesn't do anything here. We don't put very many cards in the graveyard unless we're actually winning. Uro doesn't ramp you when you only have 18 lands, typically. And the blue-blue-green-green is not very easy to play out of your graveyard.
What I liked about it when we were testing Song of Creation back in the summer was that it just lives in the graveyard. So if you have to play Song and pass, you know, you have something to get started. Secondarily, I mean, we've seen just how it can be your backup plan. It can be your primary plan, especially in a format that's dominated by red.
Yeah, I guess the card just doesn't do anything unless you actually put other cards in your graveyard. And the only thing we have that does that is Emery.
Well, Ascendancy kind of does when you start looting with it.
Sure. I feel like if we're looting with Ascendancy, we should just win the game. We shouldn't be like, oh, next turn I've got this sweet value play.
If you need some Uro synergies, you can discard it to Burgi's Horn. I'm telling you, this card Uro, it might be playable if we could just find the right supporting shell.
I mean, it's an interesting thought. I don't know what I would take out because Uro does not really help you the turn you're trying to win. So it makes your song creation plan worse and it makes your Jeskai Ascendancy plan worse. But it does, as you say, it raises your fail state way, way higher because you can always just baseline, you know, play the 6-6 and beat down with it in theory. And it gains life.
Yeah. I mean, really, the key thing is finding just a mechanism to stash away a card or two for Song of Creation, because as fun as it is to discard 20 cards to hand size, if your next draw is a land, you may actually be stuck. Maybe that's the Brazen Borrower would be better for what we're trying to do than an Uro. Unfortunately, we don't have Mishra's Bauble like the modern versions of this deck have.
Well, I think that this is a list that we know quite a bit about it, so we'll be able to see the impact that Birgi makes as soon as we take it into the queues.
So yeah, those are Pioneer lists. Next, we're going to move to Modern. So Modern Song Creation is a list, like I said, in our Discord. We've got a lot of Song Creation heads. I don't know that I have any more insight than they do, and I haven't really looked at their list. It'll be interesting to see how close they are. The list I have here kind of takes advantage of a few cards that we can't play in Modern, or excuse me, in Pioneer. One of them is Underworld Breach. This lets you set up like loops with multiple Mox Ambers, for instance. It lets you recast over and over again Mishra's Baubles, if you like. So once you're under the Song of Creation, it gives you a way to make the kill almost deterministic. I do have an Uro in this list, so Dan will be excited about that. Kinnan gets a few more tools. You can play Chromatic Sphere, which is a card that actually goes up mana with Kinnan, in addition to Springleaf Drum. Noxious Revival is a free spell that also can set the top of your deck if you've accidentally milled your Thassa's Oracle or whatever with Emery. Yeah, so I know people had some success in our Discord. I've heard tell of multiple 3-2s, but I haven't heard anyone kind of raving about the list. So,
yeah, one perspective is that Song of Creation is a card that will drive one mad.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about it is that Song of Creation, as exciting as it is, it has problems that we haven't quite solved yet. It's like, how do you have a functional deck when Song is not in play? Or if they decide they're going to try to stop the Song, can you account for that while still building a deck that wins with the Song? It's just a very challenging card. If, hypothetically, you just took out the Song of Creation, you still have like something pretty close to a dangerous combo shell. You're actually pretty close to the Grinding Station Breach deck. And I happened to see a Grinding Breach deck in the 5-0s last week that had four Birgis in it. This was from a player, Nils Fitt. It had a lot of the usual suspects in terms of cheap spells, Ambers, Baubles. They were playing Chromatic Star because that works better than Sphere with the Grinding Station. But then, you know, your Breach and your Station, this is what you're trying to use to win. Emrys are there, of course. Birgi there, I'm not totally sure I understand what role Birgi is playing. I think it just sort of guarantees you have all the mana you need. But Breach Station does also go infinite on mana with Mox Ambers. So I'm not totally sure I get this deck.
One thing I like about decks that use the graveyard right now is it's really hard for all of these Tibalt decks to sideboard any graveyard hate. So if you can do your combo fast enough, you just beat them.
Yeah, with a caveat that Tibalt himself is graveyard hate when he ults.
So 3 turns after he comes into play.
Which may be turn exactly. One. But no, you are right that those decks do have a bit of a weakness to graveyard. On the other hand, they also, you know, Force of Negation is seeing play at a large rate. And so that's where I have some trepidation about Song of Creation lines. The Nils Fitt list is interesting. I mean, I don't really understand it. Like, why are there only 3 Grinding Stations? That always feels like one of the most important cards to combo. You can dig towards them with the Uros and the Horns and stuff, but you still need one. You always need one.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It might just be that it's a blank apart from the combo turn. It's not totally a blank. It does crack your Chromatic Stars and it fills your graveyard. This list from Nils Fitt is playing 3 Unearths. It's cool that Birgi is a 3 CMC card, so you can have a very efficient turn if you ever unearth a Birgi and start going off. Ditto for unearthing a Lurrus. So I don't know. I mean, I think just this entire broader family, I know it's a little bit weird to consider Grinding Station and Song of Creation the same family of combo decks, but the supporting cards, I think, as you've identified, David, will be fairly similar. So I think it's sort of worth going through the back catalog of lists like this from the last 3 to 6 months and just see which cards are being used and figure out the right packages. Like, I like you have the Noxious Revival here. I might consider playing 2 because you can loop them with a song in play. But maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the card Underworld Breach in general, I mean, we know it's banned in Legacy, and I think people think of Modern maybe as being closer to Legacy Light than like Super Pioneer, and I think that's right. So the sense is that Underworld Breach ought to be broken, or it's a card that might be banned at some point in the future, you know, once someone figures it out. So I think using Underworld Breach in whatever capacity is a good idea. And as soon as you're starting to loop these zero mana spells, then Burgi just becomes like a 20 mana. I mean, you could almost play like an X spell in this. You don't even have to loop anything. I mean, it's crazy how much mana Burgi makes when you're not having to spend mana to do any of these loops.
So just get Devil's Play instead of Thassa's Oracle.
Yeah, exactly.
Your win condition.
Let's go face, offer your right hand to your opponent. And
all right. I see you have a couple other modern lists here.
Yeah. So I'm kind of interested in just trying a couple of Burgis out in Blue-Red Prowess and then playing four Mishra's Bauble. I think this can lead to some like really crazy turns, but it's possible that the list as it is tight enough that you just can't spare the Burgis. But it seems like a worthy place to experiment because Burgi turns your Light Up a Stage, for instance, into a zero mana draw two. That's pretty good. It turns Metamorphose into a mana positive spell. It turns Mutagenic Growth into a ritual. And like I said, it turns Mishra's Bauble into a zero mana, eventually draw one and make a mana. But maybe if you want to play Burgi, then you should like load up on Bedlam Revelers so you have use for the mana. But then you have like maybe too many creatures between Bedlam Reveler, Stormwing Entity, Burgi, and then your 8 1 mana Prowess creatures and 4 Sprite Dragons. So I'm not sure what the mix is supposed to be. Maybe Burgi just isn't worth it, but I just wanted it to sort of postulate the rough contours of Burgi being added to the Blue-Red Prowess list.
It makes some sense. The cards that excite me the most are Mutagenic Growth and Lava Dart to just sort of jumpstart the big mana turn right there.
Yeah. I'm a little bit more skeptical about this list. I suspect, like, I see what you're going for with Burgi kind of trying to give Prowess list an advantage it didn't have before. It's just those lists are so tuned and so lean with how they operate that having this kind of three drop sitting there that doesn't necessarily do a whole lot the turn it comes down, maybe a little problematic.
Yeah, I think that could be true. It's nice that this, you know, depending on how all in you want to be, but casting a Lava Dart from the graveyard, casting a Mishra's Bauble from your hand or a Mutagenic Growth from your hand lets you kind of start to do something that turn right away. But yeah, I mean, you also need to have all the creatures that pay you off for casting these spells. So I think the mix just gets tough.
Yeah.
All right. And then the final list I have proposed here is Super Wild. So this is a Burgi Waste Knot list. Waste Knot being a Daniel Schriever favorite. Waste Knot pays you off when your opponent discards cards. And the card Burning Inquiry makes sure that your opponent does discard cards. So Waste Knot also makes a bunch of black mana at times. And when it does, that black mana can be used, two of a black and a red, to play a Burgi. So you could, for instance, play Waste Knot on your second turn. You can play Burgi, play a Mishra's Bauble, make a red, cast Burning Inquiry, make a red. Your opponent discards three. You're drawing a bunch of cards, and now you are off to the races. Notable card here is Dream Salvage. It's a strange card, but it's basically a black or blue mana, black-blue hybrid. You draw cards equal to the number of cards your opponent has discarded this turn. So this is fundamentally Stormless. You're trying to win with Grapeshot after basically like turboing through your opponent's hand. Burgi's making mana the entire time, and then you're turning all of this into sweet, sweet mana. And once you've cycled through that, you cast Grapeshot and kill your opponent.
Did you know you can counter a Dream Salvage with a Veil of Summer? That's disappointing.
Well, it can't play that if you're trying to
it's true.
Cascade into Valky.
We found the window.
So as David alluded to, I have some history with Waste Knot. I think one of the first modern Grand Prix I ever played, I convinced myself that this was the way to like break the Faithless Looting and Mardu Pyromancer mirrors was to have main deck Waste Knot. And boy, like that card just needs help. Burning Inquiry is by far the best support card, but then like Burning Inquiry needs help. You know, I was using Bedlam Revelers back then. I think now I would use Ox of Agonis, and I think that's the card this deck needs to just like have something to fall back on when all these pieces don't quite come together. I think I just want a little more raw card advantage, and I think Ox is the perfect card for that.
Yeah, plus one on Ox here.
I mean, you have the skeleton here of that Steamkin Inquiry Breach Hollow One deck, where if you put the Burgis into that, you have another way to do it. And I'm curious if Hollow One is a consideration, or is that just at odds with the Waste Knot core?
I mean, you could put Hollow One here. My goal here was to basically, again, this is another Underworld Breach list. So Underworld Breach is the card I'm using to use my graveyard instead of Ox. Although you could add an Ox or two, I suppose. That wouldn't be the end of the world. Like cut the Lurrus, cut the Unearth, add an Ox, add something else. I think that the Steamkin list never felt very good. Like, it just felt way more meme-ish. So I wasn't very interested in that. I think playing the 4-4 is fine. You will be able to play it for free a lot. And, you know, that's something.
David describes the evolution of Red Black Hollow One as meme-ish, and then he builds a Waste Not Burgi list. But yeah, I mean, the interaction between Waste Not and Burgi is very interesting. And yeah, it is a bit of a riddle how to combine these.
I mean, I've considered the card Mana Forge Cinder in the past, because Waste Not, you need to like convert that black mana into red sometimes. Burgi just like does that for you. You don't even have to play Mana Forge Cinder, so it's got to be a good card.
So compared to the kind of, I would say, typical Waste Not list, as if that's a thing, you're missing like the Liliana's Caress or whatever, like the Megrim, whenever opponent discards a card, they take two. And so instead of those slots, you have this Breach Grapeshot Burgi stuff going on.
Yeah, exactly.
But Liliana's Caress was always a trap. I think that it's interesting to try to set up Reforge the Soul in a Waste Not shell. You'd have to like somehow make this into a Mystic Sanctuary mana base, but it might be worth doing. I know that's like splashing all these islands into your black red deck.
I thought about just putting one in and just seeing if you raw dog it, because whenever you do, it'll be sweet. You'll also go up enough mana sometimes casting like Mishra's Baubles and stuff that maybe you would just get to cast it.
Or you could do it with Noxious Revivals. I mean, it's weird. It gets weird. You really need these spells to resolve at a certain point, because the rest of your setup cards are all error. Okay, well, we've got a nice plentiful horn of deck lists in front of us here. Where do you think you're going to start?
Probably going to start with the red-white like beatdown list. It's simple. You're going to have some amazing turns. I'm pretty excited to cast Shodron of the Scalds. It's a card I haven't cast yet. I'm definitely down to be Shepherd of the Flocking, Shodron of the Scalds back to my hand, and adding +1/+1 counters to my Runaway Steamkin while doing it. So that's probably where I'm going to start.
Yeah, I think me too. That list looks so sweet. And I will probably have to tinker with a Waste Not build myself. I can't resist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the looks of the red-white Pioneer list. Every time I play Shodron of the Scalds, I feel like you have to like play some guitar riff in the background.
Showdown of the Skull.
I'm also intrigued by this Nilsfit Burgi Grinding Breach list. It looks pretty cool. I think that might actually give some interesting ideas for how to think about your list, David.
Yeah, I'm interested that he's playing Jace and not Thassa's Oracle. Like, I don't understand that.
Yeah. Especially with the Unearths in there, like, I agree.
So, yeah, lots to chew on, but I think Burgi is a really complicated card to try to make work. It does something very unique. It comes at a weird spot on the curve. It's a 3-mana card, not, you know, 1 or 2. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see. It's worth noting, as you did, Dan, that there have not been a lot of Burgis in 5-0 lists yet.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we're going to have to be trailblazers on that.
Or ticket donators. We'll find out.
So we'll report back on our findings next week. Speaking of which, we are going to take a very short break, and we'll close out this show with a little bit of reporting on our magic testing from previous week. Stay with us.
All right, so our card from last week was Magda, the Brazen Outlaw. Just a quick reminder, Magda, Brazen Outlaw, is 1 and a red for a 2/1 legendary Dwarven Berserker. She gives all other dwarves you control +1/+0. Whenever a dwarf you control becomes tapped, create a treasure token, and then sacrifice 5 treasures, : search your library for an artifact or dragon card, put that card onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. We had a bunch of different shells that we like. Dan had already played kind of a really strange brew he'd whipped up to a 3-2 in Modern before he decided to dominate the world with the Valky combo. I had a few lists I wanted to try and Pioneer, so I'm going to go through those real quick. The first one I wanted to try was Magda in a Jeskai Ascendancy list. So that list was already playing Mox Amber and Springleaf Drum. Magda's a legend for Mox Amber, and obviously tapping Magda with Springleaf Drum gives you extra mana. Then you have a combination that Magda has with Retraction Helix. If you cast Retraction Helix on Magda with Jeskai Ascendancy in play, you actually make, and you have either, as if you have Mox Amber or Tormod's Crypt in play, she actually makes an infinite amount of treasures. And so you can just hunt up one of Altar of the Brood or one of Niv-Mizzet Perun. And once you do that with Jeskai Ascendancy in play, you actually kill your opponent. So you can either start looting infinitely with Niv-Mizzet and kill your opponent, or every time you add a treasure to play with Altered Brood, you mill your opponent for one. Also, Magda with Jeskai Ascendancy play and Retraction Helix. If you have a Springleaf Drum in play, makes all of your creatures infinitely large. So every time she taps to bounce Springleaf Drum, she makes a treasure, which can recast the Springleaf Drum, untapping her, et cetera, et cetera. She gets +1/+1. So I ran this list through a league and did not have a lot of success. I went 1-4, although I was 4-1 in game ones. I was killing about turn 4, sometimes turn 3. So the deck did what you'd expect it to do. The fundamental issue, I think, is that this combo requires you to untap with a bunch of very fragile creatures. So it's not like your opponent has to have special sideboard tech. They're Magma Sprays and Fatal Pushes, that stops your combo. Their Wrath of Gods, that stops your combo. And then their anti-combo cards like Eidolon or Roiling Vortex, that also stops your combo. So I think after post-board, I just needed a better plan. I don't know what that is, but I don't think it can actually involve creatures at all. Maybe some sort of like Planeswalker build or something? I'm not sure.
Yeah, tell me about your sideboard plan. I'm seeing a lot of white creatures here. I see Monastery Mentor, I see Cub Warden, and Lyra Dawnbringer.
Yeah, so my thought was you end up with all this mana, but in post-board games, I was expecting my creatures to just die. They all have to, especially against red. So I think that red is maybe the best deck in the format, Boros or Mono Red. And they just, they have so many free spells that were normally going to go to your face. They're always going to disrupt your combo. So my thought was, let's just play a fair game and just put a Cub Warden onto an Ornithopter or put Lyra Dawnbringer into play and beat them. It kind of worked. I ended up having to mulligan a bunch against Mono Red. So my like theoretical, I never actually drew any of my Sweet Lifelink creatures, but had I done so, I think I would have won. I think the problem is you just need to do that against everybody. You have to find a way to abandon your combo or maybe play with your combo, but not be all in on it. I actually didn't have these four Monastery Mentors in my sideboard. I'm proposing them maybe as a different switch. My opponents were bringing in lots of removal for Jeskai Ascendancy. And so maybe you should just like abandon that and just try to like, at least Monastery Mentor, you know, is reasonable against removal. It can be, you know, it can make a couple of 1/1s before it dies. I'm not sure. It honestly seemed like maybe the sideboard problem was borderline insoluble. So I'm not that encouraged to keep tinkering. It felt good to win most of the game ones, but you really feel way far behind in the rest of the games, and your opponent gets to decide or mulligan down to hands that they know are good against you.
Yeah. One thing that, we'll discuss, I think, with the results with other decks is that Magda dives to literally every removal spell that has ever been printed and played in Magic.
Yeah. So that list was a bit of a bust, and so I tried a list I have posted here, which is sort of like a teamer list. I was trying to take advantage of sort of the Magda-Kinnan combo to sort of always have Silumgar Scorn up, and then I was going to play like a couple Goldspan Dragons, and then I had sort of like the Kiora Bone Crusher Giant. So it's just like a very fair list, but we were going to be able to like counterspell the crucial spells. That was the theory. The reality is that Magda without a bunch of dwarves is just like a really bad Llanowar elf. You need another effect in play to even tap her for mana. Even if she gets to attack once or whatever, you get a treasure. I mean, it just doesn't pay you off very much. And because you're having to play all these extra cards to make your Magda better, the deck just does not have a lot of interaction. It happened multiple times. My opponent opens on like one mana elf. I play Springleaf Drum, they play a 5-power creature, I play Magda, tap it, get my sweet value, you know, whatever, play a Mox Amber, and the game is already over. You're hopelessly behind. Cosima is just absolutely garbage in Pioneer. Playing Cosima on turn 2, or playing Omenkeel, and then playing Magda on turn 3 to activate it, even if you, let's say you, I guarantee you get to hit them and get a free land, you will lose every game you do that. You cannot do that in Pioneer. So yeah, I'm not saying that Magda or Cosima are bad, but they should not be played together, and they should not be played in a shell like this. I went 0-4 drop. I didn't feel, I mean, I won a few games, but the list just feels like there's a bunch of really bad cards in here. The one sweet interaction was when you have Magda and Kinnan together with Springleaf Drum and Gold Span Dragon. You just have so much mana at your disposal. So I think those as a shell, which is when I talked about the horn shell earlier, that's the kind of interaction where you're actually getting explosive mana that you can maybe turn into a game-winning situation. This deck just can't exploit that at all. So I don't think there's anything here worth exploring.
Yeah, so moving on to Modern, I stepped into the queues with a Jeskai tempo list that David proposed. We changed it a little bit. We cut the Toolcraft exemplars. There weren't quite enough artifacts. Kind of changed around the counterspell suite a bit. But the core of the deck is four Mothsaw's Changeling, four Universal Automaton as your dwarf suite, along with a couple Unsettled Mariners. So really abusing the Changeling mechanic to make them into dwarves. And then some Springleaf Drums. And so the Dreamstar really involves turn one Mothsaw's Changeling, turn two Magda, tap Magda, give Mothsaw's Changeling flying, attack for two, and along the way make two treasures. And then from there, you know, you're holding up Silumgar Scorn and you have a Mothsaw's Changeling, which is a dragon. And that you actually have in the list, not just, you know, these fake Changeling dragons, but one real dragon, Ojutai, to search up with Magda. And then you have one more big spell in the form of Reaper King, because the Changelings are also Scarecrows, which gives you kind of this Vindicate effect. And so this gave us kind of this 20 creature base. I was playing one Cosima, also bad and Modern, don't do that. And then some Teferis, and then just a bunch of kind of Jeskai spells that seem meta appropriate. So some Spell Pierces and Lightning Bolts, along with a Silumgar Scorn. So I hopped into the queues and I went 0-3. I learned a lot of stuff in a hurry. One is that Magda does actually occasionally do cool things. When you have that Mothsaw's Changeling start into Magda, then turn three, I just played a couple Changelings, which then can immediately tap for the Mothsaw's to give back the mana. And then I use that to convert into treasures, to convert into a Reaper King, play the last Changeling from my hand, vindicate my opponent's one land. This was all on turn three, I think. So that was sweet. But there are times where that doesn't happen, and that's like most of the time. Magda just dies to basically everything. A lot of decks play removal for Magda. Any spell that kills creatures you can name, besides, I guess, Twisted Image, which kills only thing in the ice, kills Magda. And that's a problem. I had these dreams of playing against a bunch of, you know, getting a 5-0 with a bunch of broken, bruised Tibalt players behind me. But instead, I was up against the Drown of the Lock Assassin's Trophy Fatal Push deck. Dredge with Conflagrate was no good. And then the thing with this deck is that it's so, so airy. There's so few win conditions. I won a game against Bant Value Flicker by playing an Ojutai and just winning with it, which was fun. But I also lost a game with an Ojutai against Batterskull and two Noble Hierarchs. And there was a game against Dredge where I drew Soulguide Lantern the perfect turn, but I was at 8 life and they then dredged into two Amalgams and I couldn't beat the 3/3s. Yeah, meanwhile, you'll always have Reaper King in your opening hand. Just the way this deck works. So I was about to drop, and then I handed the deck off to a superior pilot who tell me what happened with you, Dan.
Well, I won my matches. I guess I was starting in the 0-3 bracket, but I rallied for the 2-3, got that little burrito prize, the 50 play points or whatever you get for going 2-3. I got paired against the 5-color Cascade deck in round 4, the Tibalt version, and a Rakdos Shadow deck. And yeah, they were hard-fought games, but I think we built this deck with plenty of tools to fight against Cascade. Now, that's no guarantee of winning, but I was able to just sort of outjuke them with Aether Gusts and Force Negations and Spell Pierces. As much as you guys don't like Cosima / Omen Keel, it at least pitches the Force. And that's one reason why you would consider it in Modern instead of Smuggler's Copter, where the Copter is still legal. That being said, I generally agree with Damon's assessment. You know, I had advocated for trimming the Toolcraft Exemplar from the list at the last minute just because its ceiling is Wild the Cattle, and Wild the Cattle is not very good. Here it's slightly better because it's a dwarf, but I kind of just forgot that, you know, we still have the Universal Automatons on the list. They don't serve a purpose here. You know, it was pretty hard to, like, make those be worth a card. And same with Springleaf Drum. These are synergy cards, but the synergies that you have, you don't have any reliable way to dig for them. You're not tutoring them up. You're not Serum Visioning is looking for them. You just hope that you draw them or mulligan towards them and hope that your cards don't die. Yeah, this didn't feel like I had enough meat on the bones, I guess. So I decided to just maybe apply lessons from that for one more build, cut a lot of the air and play just like more payoffs. Because I felt like maybe if they're killing Magda and I'm still getting like a treasure or two out of it, maybe I can bridge to 5 drops more easily and just land a Goldspan Dragon and win with that. So my final Magda build that we tested was 4 Magdas, 4 Kinnons, 4 Goldspan Dragons. So this is my mana core, and I'm playing 3 Springleaf Drums, 4 Mothblast Changelings and 3 Mox Ambers. So I am hoping for explosive starts here with, you know, something like what Damon was describing, Springleaf or Mothblast into Magda or Kinnan. And Amber could be evolved in that. Bridging to Goldspan Dragon, but like that's not necessarily going to win. I'm not looking to attack with Goldspan over the course of 4 turns. So what I was really hoping to do was actually go with an infinite combo. The combo I chose was Aura of Dominion. This is a bizarre enchantment from Kamakawa block. You put it on a dwarf. In this case, you put it on Magda. It gives you the ability to pay 1, tap an untapped creature. That can be any untapped creature. And in exchange for that, you get to untap the creature that has the Aura of Dominion. So you're basically going to be tapping and untapping your dwarf at the cost of 1 mana each, but Magda gives you a treasure back. In order to make that go infinite, Kinnan or Goldspan, because they make the treasures double, will allow you to go infinite on mana and infinite on untapped treasures. Then Magda or Kinnan both give you the ability to like tutor whatever you want out of your deck at that point. So unlike, you know, the Clock of Omens combo, where you have like a bunch of blanks, whether that's Alter the Brood or something else, here the only blank I'm actually playing is the Aura of Dominion, and that's a blue card that pitches the Force. So I kind of just fell back on the Force Negation is good here. So any bad card I put in this deck at least pitches the Force, whether that's Cosima, whether that's Aura of Dominion. I put a Kiora in here as well. There's some Spell Pierces, some Romance. There's even a Niv-Mizzet Perun because that's part of the infinite combo. If you can't just kill them by fetching out all your Goldspan Dragons, you can also fetch 1 Korvald Fey Curse King and 1 Niv-Mizzet Perun and just draw as many cards as you need to ping them to death that way. Obviously, I included those cards because I felt like they also counted as meaty cards that if my synergies got broken up, I could maybe just hard cast those and win that way. But, you know, that's the theory. In practice, doesn't always work out. I did start off 2-0. Against like a pretty bad burn deck, kind of a budget burn deck in round 1. Scraped by in that matchup mostly by sliding out the synergy and sliding into Lightning Bolts and Uros. In round 2, I got paired against Doomwake. I've just been facing all these streamers this week. Doomwake at this point had been playing Tibalt Cascade through so many leagues that he was just memeing and was just letting his Twitch chat fill out his deck with any 8 blue cards of their choice. He was so convinced that the core was broken. So at some point, you know, I won the match by attacking with Goldspan Dragon over a galloping Lizrog or some nonsense card like that. I think he had like a Sadak as a Lord of Secrets in his deck or something. It's just very strange stuff going on. Tibalt is good, but it's not so good that you can just fill your deck with nonsense. And then, you know, after starting off 2-0, I just got 0-6 and finished out the league at 2-3. Partly I had 1 land hands that I just couldn't draw out of, but also just like the deck just wasn't coming together. I lost to Obosh Red, terrible matchup. I lost to an actual Cascade Velki deck from McWin Sauce. And then the Trickery Ultimatum deck at the end, where I almost executed the Aura of Dominion combo. I just needed to untap, and I did not untap because they Trickeried into an Ulamog, which killed my Magda. It sounds bad, but I mean, I was on the play. I had the turn 3 kill, but unfortunately, because they had Simeon Spirit Guide, they went for it on turn 2. So then I had to like pitch my Kinnan to a Force to like counter the Trickery. And then, you know, I needed 1 more turn. I had a turn 4 kill, but it just didn't work out. They had me on turns 2 and 3. So that's the tale of Aura of Dominion.
Yeah. So what are our takeaways for Magda?
I mean, the card has no support. I feel like we've identified the strongest support cards in Mothblast Changeling and Springleaf Drum, but drawing those 2 cards so often, I'm realizing they're still not cards. Those are just not magic cards that you can confidently sleeve up.
It's true when you're like, oh, this card is so sick with Mothblast Changeling. Look how good this interaction is. Well, look how good Mothblast Changeling is in all other situations in the game of Magic. And yeah, it's not pretty. The big thing for me is that even if there were better supporting cards, you know, like Magda dies to everything. It's not a, you can't build around a card that dies to everything.
Right. I think you can't build around it, but you can maybe use it as like a removal check style card. If this were not your A plan, like, you know, we talked about the idea of maybe it's just a legend for like a Lazav, Kroxa, Lurus, legendary Amber deck. And maybe there it's like, you know, you don't care whether Magda lives or dies, but it's, you know, it's a supporting card that if it survives, it gives you a nice mana boost. Maybe that's its future until better dwarves are printed. What do you think, David?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously I played in Pioneer, so I had even worse options than you guys did. I don't have a Sweet Mothblast Changeling. At least you guys have the option to nut draw and get 2 free mana that way. I don't have that option. I think without it just playing a bunch of dwarves, its other text is meaningless unless you're actually comboing. So I actually liked it in terms of a combo shell. The problem, again, is just how easy it is to disrupt. If you need to untap with a creature, people have answers to that. I mean, and like I said, they don't pack those answers to stop combo. They're playing it for all the good aggro creatures that exist. So they're ready to kill Death Shadow and, you know, Bone Crusher Giant. It's pretty easy for them to find a way to kill your 2/1.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't test that Boros Vehicles deck that was dwarf heavy. I think that's a good home for Magda because they're like, maybe Magda dies, but so what? You know, your deck is attacking anyway, with or without Magda.
Yeah, I think that's the only real way forward in Pioneer, at least, or maybe Historic if there's, you know, maybe less superpower. Like, they've actually banned some of the cards that you wouldn't want to see. I also do think that Embercleave is the best target because it wins the game that turn without having to play any crazy combo. And like you say, if you're just attacking with a bunch of 2/2s and 3/3s, that card just doesn't get stuck in your hand. If you just have 3 mana and 3 attackers, you just get to play it. You don't need a Magda to tutor it out.
Yeah. I honestly wonder if you should even build a deck with Magda with that ability in mind, in the sense that I don't think I actually ever used Magda's Sack of Artifacts once. The times I had Reaper King or Dragon Ojutai in play, I just drew them.
Oh, I used it. I've used it a bunch of times. It's good. But yeah, before we close out, I just want to give a shout out to the Magic Online player Trolls Monk, who did 5-0 with Blue-Red Magda Tempo. And it used some of the similar concepts. And I think this player just had already answered some of the questions that we were learning by losing. There's no Springleaf Realm in this list. There's not that many cards that require you to have Magda surviving. There's just the Mothless Changeling, which is kind of your big payoff. But the rest of the list is more counter magic. There's Lightning Bolt, there's Opt. Silengar Scorn is here. I think that's part of the justification for playing Changeling. But then there's 4 dragons on 5 mana. There's 3 Gold Spans, 1 Glorybringer. 4 Sprite Dragons, I'm not so sure about those. 3 Bonecrusher Giants, 3 Blood Moons, and then more hard counters. 2 Force of Negation, 3 Archmage's Charm. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe this is a compromise solution?
Yeah, I mean, this list looks about as clean as it can be. I think fundamentally the Magda Mothless Changeling makes this deck probably a little worse. I like the idea of the Silmgar Scorn with Goldspan Dragon, and maybe need the Mothless Changeling to get your dragon count to the right point, and then that makes you want to play Magda. It does give you the nut draw, right? Like, you can play your dragon super early and with all this protection. That's cool, but I don't know if it's worth it for all the times when it's like turn 5 and you draw a Magda and you're just like, wow, this game is over. I drew a 2-mana 2/1 and my opponent did literally anything else.
Yeah. I mean, their list, I agree with you, Dan. They definitely cut a lot of the bad cards, and now they have like a bunch of pretty decent blue-red cards. I think that I wouldn't expect a 5-0 if I took this deck into a league, but it can be done, as we see.
I don't think we've seen the last of Magda. I do think we'll need to go back to the drawing board on how we're thinking of it. Maybe it's not a build around, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have homes. We just need to keep looking, and that's okay.
Also, you know, Magda gets better every time they print a dwarf. So if they printed, you know, a 1-mana 2/2 dwarf for the next set that did something cool, all of a sudden, like, just a reasonable aggro dwarf build where a dwarf lord is already just playable at 2 mana, you know, then the side ability to make all the, to have these explosive mana becomes just icing on the cake. You don't have to build around, you know, all these other crazy tap abilities.
Yeah. All right. So that's Magda. We talked about Bergy. We're going to have some stories to tell next week. Damon, do you want to take us home?
I think you just took my Bergy joke, Dan. Then we'll have tons of stories from our horn of league results. until next week.
Take care, gentlemen.
See you. And with that, we've reached the end of episode 9 of Kaldheim Season. Tune in next Friday for the latest innovations in Modern and Pioneer, plus testing with Bergy and a brand new card of the week. You can follow us on Twitter at FaithlessMTG. And if you'd like to support our show, you can join our community at patreon.com/faithlessbrewing. Brewing is hard enough, so don't go it alone. Become a supporter and come brew with us. That's all for today. Stay safe out there, and we'll see you next time.